Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barkey in Washington. Today is Tuesday, September 5th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. African leaders push for market-based financing at the climate summit in Kenya.
We are not here to catalogue grievances and list problems. We are here to scrutinize ideas, assess perspectives, so that we can unlock solutions.
The U.S.-based Mercy Corps calls on world leaders meeting in the African summit to prioritize investment in long-term solutions. Gabon's coup leader is sworn in, but he doesn't say how long he will hold on to power. Nigerians anxiously await tomorrow's election tribunal judgment. Zimbabwe's President Mnangagwa is inaugurated for a second full term.
The numerous mineral resources in our country must be sustainably be exploited to leapfrog our industrialization and development.
And political organizations and trade unions in Eswatini condemn the sacking of a teachers' union president. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. African leaders are pushing for market-based financing instruments such as carbon credits to mobilize funding, which they say takes longer to get from donors to fight climate change. At the first ever African Climate Summit taking place in Nairobi, Kenya, leaders highlighted the effects of the phenomena on the continent, even though Africa contributes to it the least. At the same time, activists in Nairobi protested their exclusion from the summit. Maureen Ojiambo reports.
Climate change poses significant risks to the global community, with storms, floods, and wildfire causing substantial economic losses. The United Nations says Africa faces severe climate-related challenges, including drought, desertification, and increasing cyclones leading to displacement, migration, and food crisis. The UN estimates that damage and loss in Africa caused by climate change are between $290 billion and $440 billion this decade, depending on the degree of warming. Speaking in Nairobi, Kenya's President William Ruto says Africa should see the climate crisis as an opportunity for investment in the continent.
We have the carbon sinks that serves the world, cleans our environment, acts as sequestration of carbon that is produced by others, but we get nothing for it. It's not anywhere in our balance sheet. And that is why we are not here to catalogue grievances and list problems. We are here to scrutinize ideas, assess perspectives, so that we can unlock solutions.
The summit aims to address the increasing exposure to climate change and its associated costs, both globally and particularly in Africa. The United States Special Presidential Envoy for Climate, John Kerry, says a carbon market is needed more than ever as a tool to fight climate change.
We think Africa can benefit and the global South can benefit only if the carbon market grows. It's got to grow. You heard a mention of about 121 million. This market has to become a market in the billions in order to work effectively. And for that, we need to ensure the environmental integrity of this market. This is critical, not only to protect the climate, but also to create a thriving market.
During the event on Monday, hundreds of people joined the climate activists in Nairobi to protest their lack of inclusion at the summit. Dean Bebe is a climate activist. He says pressure is mounting on Africa to develop cleaner energy alternatives than the world's big polluters, but they lack funds to do so.
Africa Climate Summit has closed the space to civil society, particularly taking an inclusive approach to actually including us in the processes of setting the agenda. How then do we rely on a global north entity to try and set an agenda for the African people without any context or lived experience? And that's what we mean by how the conference has been fundamentally hijacked. Then how can we genuinely say that this Africa Climate Summit has the agenda for Africa and a reflection of Africa's needs?
President Ruto says climate action is not a global north issue or a global south issue. He says everyone needs to come together to find common global solutions.
Conversation of north versus south must come to an end. Who did what is not a conversation that we have the luxury to engage in. Because when the apocalypse happens, it will happen for all of us. for the entire humanity.
This year's Africa Climate Week focuses on energy system and industry. That includes urban and rural areas, infrastructure and transport, as well as land and ocean, and the effects of climate on health, livelihoods, and economies. The UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres says Africa is extremely affected by the global temperature's rise and is projected to experience escalating physical climate risks.
Passion and determination of young people around the world is responsible for much of the climate action that we have seen. You are what climate leadership looks like. At the Africa Climate Summit in Nairobi, I will be urging all leaders to act. And I ask you to turn up the volume in calling for change.
The UN says African governments have limited ability to respond to the climate crisis due to debt distress and economic shocks. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Sacramento, California.
The U.S.-based Mercy Corps has called on world leaders meeting at the Africa Climate Summit to prioritize investment in long-term solutions, rethink Africa's food system, and invest in renewable energy. The organization says failing to invest in Africa's potential would have far-reaching consequences for the world. Timothy Ryan is a managing partner at Mercy Corps Venture. He tells me that he thinks there is a moral obligation on the part of the Global North and historical lenders to drive financing towards African countries to help them adapt to climate change.
Setting the context, globally speaking, UN estimates we need around $340 billion committed every year to support some of the least developed economies and countries in their adaptation needs. And that's across, you know, a range of aspects, you know, infrastructure, urban planning and housing developments, safe water access, other types of infrastructure. In Africa, that amount, from what I've read, is somewhere around $120 billion a year needed annually, beginning now, essentially, to help countries adapt to climate change. And again, as it has been repeatedly noted, I think, you know, in previous COPs, as well as certainly in this climate summit, in this climate week, is that those countries least responsible for emissions are bearing the brunt, you know, of the impact of it. And so I think there is a moral obligation, really, of the global north and historical emitters to find ways to drive financing towards these countries that really do need to shift their systems, their economies, you know, the livelihoods of individuals to adapt to climate change over the coming decades.
African countries, African governments, what should be their role?
Overall, there have to be really, I think, three P's to drive finance. You know, the first is policy. If we want to move real money towards this opportunity to create impact, we really have to have policies that the governments really lead on that create clarity around, say, the carbon markets. You know, how will it be taxed? What's allowable? What's not? How do we create more transparency and trust? There's always the ever-going considerations for governments in terms of what policy do they want with regards to energy. So we see certain governments in sub-Saharan Africa who are really leaning hard into renewable energy. You know, Kenya, for instance, gets the majority of its power from renewable sources, whether that's geothermal, wind, or other types of sources, whereas you have other governments that are leaning more on fossil fuels. And so I do think governments have a real big lever to pull, as they always do on policy. Like, what are they going to try to incentivize? Are they going to try to really create local carbon markets? Are they going to create more clarity on the carbon markets so that a country can essentially export that carbon, if you will? So that policy is a big one. I think the second P is the kind of proof, and this is for the community, and the government plays a role in this. How do we really create a business case for adaptation? You know, beyond just it being the right thing to do, having a moral obligation to do so, how do we look at really the economic model for investments in different types of green infrastructure?
Timothy Ryan is a managing partner at Mercy Corps Ventures. He was speaking with me from Washington, D.C. Zimbabwe's President Emmerson Mnangagwa was inaugurated on Monday for his second full term after a disputed national election in which he defeated challenger Nelson Chamisa. But as Columbus Mavunga reports from Harare, the main opposition says Mnangagwa's re-election means another 5 years of economic stagnation and what they see as presidential illegitimacy.
An estimated 40,000 people saluted President Emmerson Mnangagwa as he arrived at the National Sports Stadium in Harare Monday. In his speech, Mnangagwa thanked the Zimbabweans for what he called peaceful and transparent elections. He promised to exploit Zimbabwe's natural resources to establish a manufacturing base and turn around the economy.
The numerous mineral resources in our country must be sustainably be exploited to leapfrog our industrialization and development.
Mnangagwa appears to have a heavy task ahead of him, with his country suffering one of the highest inflation rates in the world and possessing an almost worthless currency. Unemployed 23-year-old Martin Chiveza says he had to drop out of school as his parents could not afford the fees. He wants the president to spark the economy and create jobs.
I think it is angafana wita ndizoti yambe to reopen my industries.
He says Mnangagwa must reopen industries which are yet to reopen, such as automotive and entrepreneurship. That would be helpful for us. Some of us do not have education, so if some industries open, you get employed even when you did not finish school, he says. Back to the inauguration. Thus, a 21-gun salute and flyover by Zimbabwe Defense Forces to mark the beginning of Mnangagwa's new term. Mnangagwa supporters, such as 69-year-old Maka Mugadzi, were in a celebratory mood. He says, "What has happened today is really great. President Mnangagwa is our friend. We fought together the liberation struggle. I wish the government and provide water and repair roads, land and decent houses. That's my wish from Mnangagwa." Mnangagwa took power in a 2017 coup that unseated longtime ruler Robert Mugabe, then won disputed 2018 election. In last month's elections, the 8-year-old politician beat 45-year-old Nelson Chamisa of the Citizens Coalition for Change party, according to official results, which the opposition is protesting. Only three presidents from the Southern African Development Community, SADC, whose observer mission said the polls were not credible, attended Mnangagwa's inauguration Monday. The three were Filipe Nyusi from Mozambique, Felix Tshisekedi from the Democratic Republic of Congo, and South Africa's Cyril Ramaphosa. Columbus Mavunga, VOA News, Harare, Zimbabwe.
You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, September 5th. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Gabon's coup leader and newly installed transitional president, General Brice Nguema, is facing pressure to spell out his plan for restoring civilian rule. But despite promising to organize credible election, Nguema on Monday did not specify how long he will hold on to power. Timothy Obiezu reports.
General Brice Oligui Nguema took the oath of office as Gabon's interim president at the presidential palace in the capital, Libreville, amid a cheering crowd of supporters and a military display. But experts say the ceremony marks the beginning of an uncertain future in the Central African nation. Oligui, who promised to hold free and transparent elections to return the country to civilian rule, did not say when he'll cede power. He says a new constitution must first be adopted by referendum. God Bless Otubere is the founder of the non-profit pro-democracy group Ready to Lead Africa.
The military knows that they do not have the capacity to run a democratically run country. So when he's not given a timeline, it is because he might also not be free from the curse of hanging on to power. I do not believe that he has the best interest of the country at heart if he is not making a commitment to when he will be transitioning the country back to democratic rule.
It is questionable whether Gabon had democratic rule in the past, Omar Bongo and his son Ali ruled the country for a total of 56 years. Still, on Friday, Gabon's military leaders said they were not in a hurry to return to democracy and repeat past mistakes. Last week, Oligui and his men overthrew Ali Bongo shortly after he was declared the winner of the disputed presidential polls. The military cited corruption and serious institutional, political, and economic problems as grounds for the overthrow. The coup has drawn global criticisms, including from the United Nations and the African Union, which suspended Gabon and threatened to impose sanctions if coup leaders fail to restore constitutional order. Chris Kwaja, a member of the United Nations Working Group on the Use of Mercenaries, says sanctions would make coup leaders more compliant.
Even for Niger, the 3 years they initially agreed on was based on pressure from ECOWAS and other actors.
Experts say the growing trend for military takeovers is triggered by poor governance in Africa. Timothy Obiezu, VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
In Nigeria, the national chairman of the opposition Labour Party is expressing confidence that the election tribunal will declare the group's candidate, Peter Obi, the winner of the recent presidential election on Wednesday. Julius Abori's remarks come after the tribunal announced plans to declare judgment on the petitions seeking to challenge the outcome of the presidential election on Wednesday. For reaction and anticipation of the court's announcement, VOA's Peter Clotty reached Labour Party Chairman Julius Abori.
We expect the election tribunal to declare Peter Obi as the president of Nigeria. We believe very strongly that we won that election. We believe that that election was manipulated, and that's why we decided to take our case to court. We presented our cases, our evidences before the courts in a very systematic and effective manner. And we expect that if the judiciary do the right thing, we expect that judgment will be in our favor. Our hopes are very high. Nigeria's expectation is high. There are high hopes from the youth. From all strata of the society, the hopes are high. We believe that the judiciary will do the right thing, and Peter Obi will become president, will be declared as president of the country.
I am sure, Mr. Abure, you've heard some quarters saying that the president, if his victory is quashed and Peter Obi is made or is adjudged the winner, it will create chaos and confusion in Nigeria. Your thoughts?
No chaos, no confusion in Nigeria. And that's why we have the rule of law. The rule of law is that nobody is above the law. If the court pronounces Peter Obi president, so be it, and he will be sworn in and becomes the president of Nigeria. We have had situations where the courts have declared null and void some governors in the federation who have been sworn in, and they vacate the seat. We have several instances of such circumstances in Edo and in several other states, even in Imo, even in Kogi, where the courts have ruled that the governors didn't win the election and they vacated the office and the new people took over. So if the court is courageous enough to declare Peter Obi the president, no confusion will be. If our Nigerians will be happy, it will bring orderliness, it will bring new hope, it will bring new vision, it will bring new energy and new commitment to the nation. It will bring a new order in Nigeria, a new vision and a new hope. So I don't agree with that school of thought that it will bring about confusion and disharmony in Nigeria.
You've heard arguments from the supporters of the ruling APC saying that yourself, the LP, is not challenging the outcome of the other elections, talking about the senatorial House of Representatives and other elections, but you are only challenging the outcome of the presidential election, which they said shows the hypocrisy and what they call far-fetched argument that you presented in court. What are your thoughts?
Well, we are not challenging. If you have done the right thing in certain areas, obviously we should not challenge what has been done properly. It is the illegality, the rascality, the criminal manipulation of the presidential election that we have issues.
Julius Aburi is the national chairman of the opposition Labour Party of Nigeria. He was speaking with viewers Peter Clotty. In Eswatini, the opposition People's United Democratic Movement, also known as PUDEMO, has urged all political organizations and trade unions to unite and condemned the dismissal of Mbongwa Dlamini, the president of the Swaziland National Association of Teachers, the SNAT. A year ago, the government accused Dlamini of instructing teachers not to go to school after the Swaziland International Solidarity Forces called for the closure of schools to protest the continued imprisonment of two members of parliament. Dlamini said he advised the teachers not to go to school for their own safety. Last week, the government charged Dlamini with absenteeism and fired him. Peniel Malinga is the Secretary General of PUDEMO. He tells me that Dlamini's dismissal is union bashing and that he should be reinstated.
As a movement, as PUDEMO, we have noticed and noted the attitude of the state of Swati's regime, the attack on the trade union movement in Swaziland. Hence, the way they've treated the president, Comrade Mbongwa, it is a clear sign that the Tinkhundla system of government is all out to silence the voices of the people, is all out to destroy the trade union movement, is all out to victimize Comrade Mbongwa for his involvement in leading the progressive trade unions, SNAT in particular, and his involvement in the call for the democratization of the of Swaziland, and also for his call for the respect of the workers' rights in the country. Hence, the state is all out to ensure that they don't want to see Comrade Mbongwa in anywhere nearer the trade union movement. Hence, as PUDEMO, we will fight tooth and nail, side by side, with SNAT to ensure that Comrade Mbongwa is back as a president and also as a leader of the trade union, in particular of the SNAT union.
But I remember a year ago, the government accused Mr. Mbongwa of leading a movement of the teachers for them to stay away from school. So I guess you can understand, maybe that's why he was terminated.
First and foremost, what needs to be known and be understood is that Comrade Mbongwa, when he pronounced that teachers must stay away from school, it was because he saw the need to look after the interests of the teachers and the security of the teachers. And then more than anything, he was discharging his duties that was mandated to him by the Congress of the Teachers. Therefore, whatever Mbongwa said in that particular time, he was representing the views of the teachers. He was not speaking for himself because he has a political and organizational duty to look at security of the teachers. If he sees that his membership, they are not safe by going to school, he has the right to say that. Therefore, there was no need for the state to punish him for that.
Peniel Malinga is the Secretary General of the People's United Democratic Movement, also known as PUDEMO, of Eswatini. He was speaking with me from the capital, Mbabane. And that's it for this Tuesday, September 5th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending your morning with us. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, on Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I am James Butte, Washington, wishing that you will have an amazing Tuesday.